Welcome back, y'all. It's Trent on the loose, longtime friend Jeff Stewart. What are you sitting in a skid steer? What are you doing, Jeff?
Well, I'm sitting in my pickup. I spend most of my life in this thing, so I'm kind of comfortable here.
I, you know what? I understand and can empathize with that feeling. You know, I drive 9,000, 8,000 miles a month. I don't want to embellish, only 8,000 miles a month.
That's a lot of miles.
Yeah. And you drive that many, but you don't leave the oil field. Is that a true story?
That is, yeah, we work from North Dakota all the way down through Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma. Yep.
You just shot yourself in the foot. You know why?
Why is
That means
that?
you drive past my house on a regular basis and never call and say, "Hey, Trent, what are you doing? Want some coffee?"
You're never home.
That's because when you call, I'm in North Dakota.
That's probably right.
So tell us about, because the last time, well, not the last time, but you once were in the feed business, cattle feed business. Today you're in the oil field business. What exactly are you doing in the oil field, and what's the condition of the oil field today?
You know, we started an oil field maintenance company at an old age in my life when I got out of the ag business, which was near and dear to my heart. As you know, my background from six generation family ranch, so I have a pretty good understanding of that whole nature. But I got into the oil field business because my son got me into it, and we have a maintenance company. I started working for another company as their business development manager, and realized that there was some changes that need to be made, and most of these companies don't want to listen to their customers. So we started our own company. It was a pretty big undertaking at my age. And so we clean radiators with dry ice, with dry ice machines. It's a pretty technical operation, but the training is very intense, and our guys are really good at what they do. So we started doing that, and we also change oil. We designed our own oil changing skids. Most of these companies will spend $500,000 to $1 million on an oil changing unit. And we built our own from scratch, and we can change about nine at a setting. And all we do is change the oil totes, take off the old, put on the new. And so it's pretty unique. We have a small footprint, and we've been able to accommodate timing and cost to our customers, which has been really vital. The oil field itself right now, with all that's going on, the merging and the buyouts and all the different things, is pretty healthy. There's a lot coming down the road that I will probably never understand, but there's some real big opportunities. And even though the political side of things is probably not real favorable, they're still pushing forward and moving forward. So
You know, we constantly hear buzz, and every day we talk about the end of fossil fuel business, which, by the way, I no longer believe is a fossil fuel. That's beside the point. And yet, when you get in the oil field, and I was just in Dunn County last week talking to people who have a contract in the oil field themselves for a different area, not maintenance, but there continues to be a buzz and a thriving that's happening in the oil patch from North Dakota to Texas. That seems to be completely isolated with all of the noise that we hear on a regular basis. You feel like that's accurate?
yeah, there's always going to be a buzz, but I try to keep my ear to the ground and trying to find out what's really happening. But you can really gauge a lot what's going on by frac companies. The contracts, these guys have got contracts going on like you wouldn't believe, and so it's the work is getting more and more and more intense. And so I don't see any, I mean, other than pricing, which they're trying to mess with. But
Right.
these old big oil companies, they don't want $120 oil. They want this, $50, $60 oil, because then it's good for everybody. Everybody can make some money, and it's pretty stable. So with the contracts that I'm hearing from the different companies, we're on eight different vendor lists of big frac companies, and so they're all very, very positive on what's happening. So
Why did gas prices jump up 30 cents this week?
it's all relative to what's going on overseas and political. That's about all I can tell you, Trent. I don't have a magic wand or
Yeah.
perfect answer for that, but
Well, I have friends who are in the oil distribution and gas distribution business. And I noticed this week in my little circle, I haven't left the state this week, but gas was 314 Sunday morning. Monday morning, it's 3:49. Diesel did not change, but gas jumped 30 cents. So I called a friend of mine who distributes gas in Kansas. He said, "I have no idea. Nobody said anything. It just went up."
Yeah, you just never know. I really believe that it has to do with the purchasing power and what's coming out. They've got X amount of costs in a certain amount of production, and I think eventually that bubble has to burst. And that's, you just got to get the price increase up to accommodate that. Once they get through that, that volume or whatever it is going to have to come down. It's kind of relative to anything else. I mean, we're in the same boat. Like I told you many times, my prices have gone up, have tripled and doubled and gone up, insurance from dry ice cost to everything. It's just stupid. And we can't pass that on. We're not like a service station, where they pretty much have to, but we've got to try and stay competitive. So I think it's just a matter of a bubble bursting is really what I think it is, because somebody has to overcome cost.
Well, Jeff, what's most frustrating, and I wish that every American understood this, we do not need to rely on 1 pound, gallon, barrel of imported energy in any way, shape, or form. We have all of the energy we need right here at home to be energy independent. It's simply the policies that are preventing us from utilizing the resource we have.
Amen. 100%. We can be totally, well, we have been oil independent, but you can't deplete our supplies, and you can't do the play the games they have politically to manipulate this whole market. We will never survive as a country, a society, anything without petroleum. It just won't happen because it's in everything. It's kind of like corn. Corn's in everything too.
Yeah, absolutely. On a side note, while we're talking about policy, you actually stepped out of the oil field for a short period of time on this week, Monday morning, I believe, and went to the PSC meeting. What'd you learn there?
Not much. It was kind of like watching paint dry, but I did have something very interesting happen to me, which sometimes you think how the Lord works in mysterious ways. I'm sitting in the meeting. I'm early, because if I'm 15 minutes early, I'm usually late. So I believe in Lombardi time. I'm sitting there, and two gentlemen walk in, and one sits in front of me and one sits beside me, and they're both with Summit. And I thought it was really interesting because they asked me who I was, and I told them, and I gave them my card. And I was honored to do so, because I think I gave a little different perspective to these guys about what they're doing and how it affects my business. And so we had quite a discussion. There wasn't any answers I could get from them, because you can't get answers from people who are basically in it for the money. And that's really all it is. This is about the money. This isn't about climate change. It's not about the environment. It's not about any of that. It's about, I think, many, many, many people, from the politics all the way to big business, sticking their hands in the cookie jar. And it affects me directly. And I told them that. I said, you guys ought to basically be ashamed of yourself for what you're doing, because, to stick a product like this, which is our nature's gas, as you put it, which it truly is, you can't do things like this and then expect me, the taxpayer, and businesses to sustain themselves. We can't do it. The other thing I found really interesting when I did a little deep dive is that there's an agricultural equipment company. If you don't want me to mention any of them, I won't. But they are a huge financial supporter and investor in this summit. And
Let's
I
just
thought to
say
myself,
they put a dent in the demand on the supply of green paint. Let's just leave it at that.
yeah. Because I'm looking at this, and I said to the guy, I said, you have this large investor. And I said, isn't it kind of an oxymoron to think that if you're taking CO2 out of the atmosphere, which plants thrive on, that if these plants start to not produce their normal production levels, that how are they going to sell more combines and tractors? I said, this makes no sense to me. So it's all about the money, the Benjamins.
Yeah, and just this project that you're in the middle of, Jeff, because you currently live in North Dakota, but in the second topic or second segment, we're going to talk about that. But just this project alone and what is up for grabs over a 12-year period of time is $18 billion of taxpayer money to go into reducing plant food in the atmosphere. That makes sense to who?
Not to anybody that has any common sense, I can tell you that. I mean,
Well,
we've got two ethanol plants in North Dakota right now that are capturing this and sticking it in the ground. They don't need the Summit pipeline. But they're both going to be getting paid between 18 and $22 million a year free taxpayer money because of the 45Q. And it's ridiculous to me.
It is absolutely ridiculous. Jeff Stewart, my guest. Did you say it's Galaxy Oil Maintenance?
Galaxy Resources Incorporated. Yep.
Galaxy
Yeah.
Resources Incorporated. Been good to have that down before we started, but hey, we're here now. Jeff Stewart,
Yep.
we'll take a break. We'll be back with more. And why exactly do you use dry ice to clean radiators? That's where we start when we come back with more Trent on the Loose after this. Well, in today's world, many people are talking about nitric oxide as a part of healthy living, but Dr. Nathan Bryan steps in here because how do we know the difference between one nitric oxide supplement and another one, Nathan?
Well, there's several things you look for. Is the people that formulated or backing that product ever published a paper in the nitric oxide literature? Do they know anything about the basic enzymology and biochemistry of nitric oxide? Because here's what people do. Put a lot of ingredients in a bag or in a capsule and call it nitric oxide. You have to understand how the human body makes nitric oxide. You got to understand what goes wrong in people that can't make it. And then you got to provide product technology that actually fixes the reason you can't make nitric oxide. If you're low in testosterone, you don't give precursors or things because you've lost the ability to produce testosterone. What do? You actually give the actual molecules. Same thing with women with hormone replacement.
Full details and order the product at NO2U.com. That's NO, number two, letter U.com. Put Trent as your coupon code and I pay the shipping. Wait a minute, that's not good. Welcome back. Trent on the loose. Jeff Stewart, he's contained. He's in this pickup until all the radiators in the Bakken to Midland, Texas, are clean. All right, dry ice. How do you make dry ice?
Well, dry ice is made out of CO2, and it's kind of a funny thing. I've learned a lot about it since we started using it about 8 years ago. And they compress it, they drop it to a certain temperature, and then they compress it. And it comes out of all these stacks and these air quality containment companies. When they pull that CO2 out of the atmosphere or out of the stacks, it comes out at 95.6% pure. And that still has gases in it that can be highly combustible. And so I had one of my first suppliers when they started using dry ice while he was compressing it, and his machinery was down about every 2 weeks. And I kept saying, "What in the world is going on?" Well, here they were trying to use 95.6%. And so he was literally blowing up his equipment. And so when they finally started to clean it and process it and got it to 99.9, which is food grade, then they didn't have any problems. And the quality of the product was really nice. Typically, we use the compressed dry ice. It turns into a block, and it's 109 degrees below zero. That's the temperature of that ice, so it's pretty cold. When we use it, we have a specific machine that we use. It's a cold jet machine, and it shaves this block of ice, so it's kind of like a snow cone. So it shaves it, and then we run at about 125 PSI, and we clean the radiators with that. And when it hits a surface, why, it literally extracts. It doesn't pressure in, it extracts, and it hits that. And I could literally go to a it pulls all this the frac sand and oil and so forth off that radiator. So we clean the bottom and we clean the top. When we're done, it's kind of like a new radiator because it literally will take off the corrosion and all that kind of stuff, and it won't hurt the fins or anything on the radiator. Now, these are $100,000 radiators, so you really got to know what you're doing. I've never replaced one, thank God, but we found a lot of faulty
I
ones.
kind of wish
But
you wouldn't have said that on my program.
yeah, right. So
I'll
that's
get
why.
a call from you next week. Trent, I'm never talking to you again.
No, I mean, there are compromised radiators, and we find them right away. And so our customers appreciate that. We document everything. Believe me, you have to. We probably keep the most accurate. And I'm not saying this as a joke. It's a fact. I know for a fact that we keep probably more accurate records than anybody in the field that does this. We can tell you what radiator we touched 8 years ago and who did it and the timing and everything. So we do that quite extensively. The product itself comes in pellets, blocks, whatever application you want to use it for. And it's an amazing product. They've been using it on artifacts for 40 years, cleaning artifacts and expensive books and things of that nature. So,
And you tell me that you're thinking about relocating for a certain reason.
yeah, we started a project 2 years ago. It was a big undertaking. It was roughly going to be around $20 million project that we were looking at to build in North Dakota, because our pricing, when they started sticking CO2 in the ground, why the pricing went from 17 cents a pound to 70 cents a pound. So that's pretty dramatic in my field. And you use quite a bit, about 200 pounds per radiator. And we used about 125 ton last year. We'll triple that this year. So we looked at a project in North Dakota to build our own processing plant, and we were going to make a variety of products because there's about seven different categories that you can use dry ice with, or CO2 with, I should say. You can go in the food industry, you can go to the water purification plants. They're using it in plastics and foams, sunglasses, clothing, accessories, furniture. I mean, all kinds of fuel. They're adding hydrogen to it now, making a methane fuel. So there's a variety of different things as this product can be used in, and that's what upsets me so much, is because when they start sticking it in the ground, it shut my project down. Summit coming across this state and all the other states, they're all trying to plug into this big pipeline. Well, now I can't buy a CO2. I had a source that I was working on. It was going to be reasonable for me and reasonable for them. Well, none of these companies want to sell me the CO2, because if they sell it to me, they can't take advantage of the 45Q, the tax incentive. And so I ha if the only way I could take advantage of it is if I made a product that would, I like say water purification, I could use a Q45 with that, because it doesn't go back in the atmosphere. So anything that goes back into the atmosphere, as far as the product goes, you cannot take advantage of that 45Q. So I shut the project down, and I literally told Summit that. I said, you guys.
Hold up for a second, Jeff. We're going to come back to you shutting the project down. I'm doing math in my head. Sometimes I struggle, sometimes I'm okay.
No problem.
So theoretically, Summit is getting the CO2, whatever the arrangement is with the ethanol plant or the coal plant, I don't care. And they're putting in a pipeline, and they're supposedly putting it under Oliver and Mercer County, which I still to this day doubt is going to happen. But this is what they're telling us is going to happen. And they're going to put it a mile and a half deep under Oliver and Mercer County, and they're going to get paid thanks to the 45Q plus the Use It Act and everything that happened all since 2008 to pay Summit $85 a metric ton. Correct?
I don't know what Summit's going to get, because they won't disclose that. But
But
I do know
that's
that.
what the available tax credit through the Inflation Reduction Act, the Use It Act, and the 45Q says it is.
Yes, $85 if you pull it off a stack, and $180 if you pull it out of the air.
Out of the atmosphere. Okay, but at $85 a ton is still 2,000 pounds. So 85 divided by 2,000 is 4 cents, 4.2 cents. And you can't buy it for 17 cents. You can't buy it for 70 cents. Where you say you can't afford it at 70 cents, which makes sense to me. Something doesn't add up here, because I've been talking about from day one that this isn't about burying CO2. This is about monopolizing the commodity. And that's exactly what you're saying is happening.
Yeah, this is exactly what's happening. I should have clarified, my finished product is 70 cents. I can go to Texas right now and I can buy it for less than a penny a pound. And
Wow.
I don't know why that down there they're not concerned about taking advantage of the 45Q. I don't know why. But I'm in negotiations with a big company right now that's got all the CO2 I could possibly want. These guys up here, I can buy it for 85. I offered them $85. Matter of fact, I offered them $100 a ton, but they don't get the tax credit. So when you can get $20 million a year stuck in your pocket for nothing, who wouldn't take that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's happening. All right. So I interrupted you. You're shutting down and you're going to Texas.
Well, yeah, unless they stop this thing, I have a supply, two supplies here in North Dakota that I can buy from if they can't get to the pipeline. I mean, one of them is going to cost them $60 million to put the pipeline in to get to the pipeline. But if you get $20 million a year, that's insignificant. So why wouldn't you put in a pipeline? So I got a real hunch. I mean, you don't think that this thing will happen, but when you got a governor that's in Iowa running for president telling him it's going to happen, I mean, who are you going to believe, So if this thing gets shut down, then absolutely, project goes forward.
I totally believe that Summit is angling at monopolizing CO2. I do not believe it'll end up a mile and a half deep under earth in Oliver Mercer County.
Well, if they were to put this product in storage and scrub it and clean it, then it's It's a billions and billions and billions of dollars.
But they don't get their
It's
$85 per metric ton if they don't leave it there for 12 years. You know how many things are going to happen in 12 years?
lots of things. I probably won't be around to see
You know
it.
how many things are going to happen in 12 months?
Right. I don't know what's going to happen in 12 hours.
Right, Jeff, this is fascinating stuff. We got a minute and a half. Kind of tell us what we most need to know. I mean, I think you've shed so much light on the true business and monopolization of CO2 so far. What else do we need to most know before while we have you here?
I don't know. I mean, I always look at, the glass is half full. I mean, I'm very optimistic about things. We've got a lot going for us. We actually started another company. Some opportunities have arose, and so we do wholesale distribution now. We supply over 300 products to these different oil companies and frac companies and that kind of thing because we felt there was a real opportunity, and it's been great for us. We just started this year, started in December of last year. So I see things really bright. I really pray to God that the election goes okay because this country, we really need to turn some things around. It's such a wonderful country and we've had so many people die for this freedom that I just can't see any of us letting it go down the tube. So I pray and hope that that all turns around, but I am very optimistic about the oil business. It's probably one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life is I love the people. I thought ag business was fantastic because I love ranch farmers and ranchers. It's in my blood to the core. But these oil guys are really amazing. They're a lot of fun to work with. They're very demanding, and they expect only the best. There's no messing around. And so we're the little guy. We have to try a hell of a lot harder than everybody else. So we do. We believe in developing relationships into partnerships. We believe in customer service and quality work, and we will never deviate from that.
As a taxpayer of the United States, and for the generations of taxpayers that are going to have to pay for this boondoggle that we're in the middle of right now, just stop and think about what we've learned in the last 30 minutes from Jeff Stewart. We are supposedly capturing CO2 and burying it in the ground because it's causing a climate crisis. And yet, Jeff has walked us through many ingredients that this commodity improves human lives with, including food grade. And somehow this is what's the source of our problems. I don't, 2 + 2 don't equal 4 in this particular case. Thanks for sharing the real arithmetic with us, Jeff Stewart.
My pleasure.
God bless the veterans and the farmers who feed us.
Amen.